We're fabulous. We're fabulous.
Abfab.
Abfab. It's what I learned. I'm sure I've told you this from my wife's uncle Dominic, who's in his early 80s. He's had at least one stroke. He has other medical complaints. But whenever you see him, you ask him, "How are you, Dominic? How are you doing?" "Fabulous. I'm fabulous. I'm feeling great." And I like his attitude. That's the last thing I want to hear from somebody is, "Oh, you know, this bothers me. Oh, that bothers me." Support for this episode of I Hear of Sherlock Everywhere is made possible by the Wes Express, the premier publisher of books about Sherlock Holmes and his world. Find them online right now at wesexpress.com.
I Hear of Sherlock Everywhere, episode 179. Catching up with Scott and Bert.
I hear of Sherlock everywhere since you became astronomer.
In a world where it's always 1895, comes I Hear of Sherlock Everywhere, a podcast for devotees of Mr. Sherlock Holmes, the world's first unofficial consulting detective.
I've heard of you before. You're Holmes the meddler, Holmes the busybody, Holmes the Scotland Yard jack in office.
The game's afoot as we discuss goings-on in the world of Sherlock Holmes enthusiasts, the Bigger Street irregulars, and popular culture related to the great detective.
As we go to press, sensational developments have been reported.
So join your hosts, Scott Monty and Burke Wolder, as they talk about what's new in the world of Sherlock Holmes.
You couldn't have come at a better time!
Well, hello, and welcome to I Hear of Sherlock Everywhere, the first podcast for Sherlock Holmes devotees where it's always 1895. I'm Scott Monty.
I'm Bert Wolder.
And I didn't know whether to call this Catching Up with Scott and Bert or Catching Up with Bert and Scott. What do you think would work?
Well, I think either one. You know, we're both very shifty, fast-moving kinds of people. You know,
yes.
One comes in one door, the other is going out the other door.
That is true, and that comes with scheduling. And we'll get to that in just a moment. Before we do, just a quick reminder, the show notes for this episode are available, of course, as always, on SherlockHolmesPodcast.com, but specifically at ihose.co/ihose179. That's all lowercase, ihose.co/179. You can certainly find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter as I Hear of Sherlock. You can leave us a comment at the website. You can email us at comment@ihearofsherlock.com, or we always welcome your voicemail. We've had a few in recent episodes, and we encourage you to call in and leave whatever message you care at 774-221-READ. That's 774-221-7323. Now, that out of the way, let's get to the program.
Yeah.
Well, you know, this is one of those cases where, you know, we're running, 26 shows a year, and we are both gainfully employed for the most part, which means that we are on the road or we're with family and doing things, and we have interview guests that have their own plans and that are, you know, trying to get book tours done and other things. So, you know, it's a bit of a juggling exercise for us to put these shows together. And in this case, we just ran up against the clock and realized that we wouldn't be able to bring you the kind of show that you were accustomed to with a guest if we tried to just squeeze it in. And so you're stuck with us, just stuck with Bert and I for the next 45 minutes or so. But we thought we would use this constructively, because how many times is it just you and us together where we just get to spend time with you? You know, we usually divert our attention to whatever guest is with us. And right now we have you with us. So we thought we would have a little conversation between ourselves and invite you in and see what you happen to think of it. Bert, does that sound like an okay plan to you?
It sounds wonderful, but I think we should let our listeners go first. So what's on, listener, what's on your mind?
Yes.
Now, don't be shy.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one. Yeah. Well, normally this would be where we would take questions and comments and all the rest that you would send in to us and we would respond to them. Boy, we don't really plan too well, do we?
No.
Well, I think we can fill the airwaves just fine, absent any specific questions that we're answering. And there's a few things I'm going to come up with, but let me start out by asking you, Bert, because the last time we were here together, it was with Nicholas Meyer. And we had a wonderful conversation with him. He's just a fascinating interview every time we talk to him. And you mentioned that you planned to head into New York to see him at a couple of events. I think there was the book signing at Otto's, that mysterious bookshop. And then there was another event at the 92nd Street Y. What happened over those last couple of weeks?
Yeah, well, that is indicative of what goes on in the fall in the Sherlockian world, at least on the East Coast. You know, I'm sad that I don't have a greater sense of what goes on in the southern part of the country or in England. Of course, I know what's going on with the Sherlock Holmes Society in London, but it really does kick off a season of events and society meetings. And this year, it's really been accelerated by the publication of Nick's book. You know, and a book by Nicholas Meyer, you know, is always an event, another Sherlock Holmes book, because as we discussed with Nick, he really did kick off all the way back, you know, more than 40 years ago, the rebirth of interest in Sherlock Holmes with the 7% solution. So Nick has been on a book tour, and one of the things, actually, it turns out we mentioned incorrectly. The original info we had was he was going to be at Otto's mysterious bookshop in 58 Warren Street in New York City on Monday, October 21st. But in fact, he was there on Tuesday, October 22nd. And he had a lovely turnout of folks who were there. And he did talk. He gave a brief talk. He had prepared and written a talk that encapsulated many of the things that our listeners heard in our interview, the spark, the idea behind this latest book, his thoughts about forgery and authenticity, his view of some of the challenges that are facing society today in terms of truth and fake news and so on. And he followed that at Otto's with a reading. He read a few pages from the book, and it was really very well received. And the next day, I was back in New York because he and the actor Joel Grey appeared at the 92nd Street Y in a program called Holmes and Tevye, Fiddlers on the Roof. And Tevye, of course, is the milkman character who is the real hero or the central character, I suppose, in the musical Fiddler on the Roof. Which is, I mean, to make a long story short for our listeners who don't know Fiddler on the Roof and so on, there were a large literary output by an author who used the pen name of Sholem Aleichem, and these were basically wonderful stories and characters from the tales of Sholem Aleichem were brought together in a musical that debuted in the 1960s called Fiddler on the Roof. And the story of Fiddler on the Roof is basically what happens when a community in Russia is forcibly disbanded, that the authorities are evicting these poor people. And it's the upheaval of their lives at the same time they're coping with a whole new world, you know, a world that's gone from the traditional world where the father had the last word in the household and chose husbands for his daughters, to a world where love and personal choice was more important. And Joel Gray, Joel Gray, was there because Joel is actually has directed a production of Fiddler on the Roof, which originally starred Zero Mostel back in the 1960s, but a new production of Fiddler on the Roof that's all in Yiddish. And it's been remarkably well received and now is traveling around the world. I think it's going to be in Australia, and it will end its global tour with a presentation, I think, in Los Angeles. And Nick Meyer had worked with Joel Gray when Joel made an appearance in the film of The 7% Solution. And so before a very attentive, very well-attended crowd at the 92nd Street Y, Nick Meyer and Joel Gray traded off for an hour asking each other questions, kind of like what we're doing now. And it was a real opportunity for both of them just to satisfy their curiosity. So, for example, Nick Meyer asked Joel Gray, you know, tell me where that character came from, the character of the master of ceremonies in Cabaret, and how did you invent him? And, you know, Joel Gray had a whole series of questions he was interested in. They've known each other for a very long time. Hmm. So that was a lot of fun. And lo and behold, I was then at the Sons of the Copper Beaches meeting.
Well, but before you get down to Philadelphia, I'm curious, did Joel ask any questions of Nick, or was it mostly Nick acting as the interviewer?
Oh, no. Joel did ask. They both were pretty much 50-50,
okay,
peppering each other with questions. One of the things Joel Gray was interested in was whether or not this was going to be a movie, the new book.
Huh.
Because he felt that there were a lot. I mean, he said that, you know, as he was reading it, he could see it on the screen. So he's very interested in that.
Yeah.
And Nick was interested in, you know, how Joel got into acting and how that started. So, and it's interesting that although this was billed as Holmes and Tevye, Fiddlers on the Roof, the idea of uncertainty, and of course they're both great. Well, Tevye was a milkman. He was not a fiddler. The musical Fiddler on the Roof referred to the phrase Fiddler on the Roof as a sort of a symbol of uncertainty.
Right.
Our lives are as fragile and out of balance and uncertain as a fiddler on the roof could be. But of course, Holmes is a great violinist. But those parallels and comparisons didn't really feature in the conversation.
Yeah. But when you think about the role of a milkman in a given town or community, it is really part of the bedrock of the community. It is someone that everyone has contact with. He is someone to whom everyone can relate. And in that regard, a milkman, a Tevye, sounds an awful lot like Watson rather than Holmes, doesn't he?
Oh, I like that. Yeah, that's a great observation.
Oh.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that.
Now, Watson down on the ground delivering milk while Holmes is up on the roof fiddling.
Kicking off the shingles.
Yeah, kicking off the shingles and drawing attention to himself and generally being dramatic while Watson simply gets the job done.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. I don't know. I just thought I'd throw that observation in there as you were speaking, because it seemed to me, as you were saying, you know, Holmes and Tevye were not necessarily compatible or comparable in a parallel way. So that seemed to me to make a little more sense.
Well, you know, the audience also asked questions, and one of the questions that they both got, or that Nick got certainly, was to dig a little bit deeper into the parallel between Holmes and Fiddler on the Roof. And in fact, if you were to take a Fiddler on the Roof style treatment, what songs would you imagine could be relevant for Holmes.
Yeah.
And that was a really great question. And so there was a lot of discussion about that. And eventually Nick said, you know, I think the best one would be tradition.
Because
there's this great song in Fiddler all about tradition and how much it shaped the lives of these people, the roles that historically the father, the mother, the daughter would be playing in the household.
I like
that. Of course, Holmes, you could say Holmes had a great Holmes was certainly a creature of tradition, I suppose, in the sense of, well, scientific tradition, but also the cultural tradition of the time.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes great sense. Well, speaking of tradition, why don't you take us down to Philadelphia? Because there we have the tradition of the Sons of the Copper Beeches. And this is interesting because this is a Sherlockian society that's existed in Philadelphia since when? The 19, is it 50s or so?
It's one of the earliest. It's not as early as the Speckled Band, but it is certainly the 50s, if not the 40s.
Maybe late 40s, early 50s, yeah. And longtime fans of the show may recall that Bert did a little reportage from the Sons of the Copper Beeches on episode 18. Episode 18, my goodness. That was just before, I think it was just before we podfaded for, almost a year, I think it was. That was our last report in episode 18. And, you know, I'd be interested, Bert, in your take, because the Sons of the Copper Beeches today is drastically different from the Sons of the Copper Beeches in 2007 when that episode originally aired. We're talking about 12 years that span the distance between these two episodes at this same society. What can you tell us about the Copper Beeches and how that might reflect the evolution of participation in Sherlockian societies overall right now?
Oh, well, it's a great question. I was honestly struck by how exciting the Copper, I mean, this could, I hope it doesn't sound wrong, you know, for me just to say this, but honestly, I was struck by how exciting the Sons of the Copper Beeches is as an organization today. You know, I've loved the Copper Beeches for years. And as you point out, we did do, you know, that one a little program back in the days when the Sons of the Copper Beeches was one of the handful of societies that had maintained an all-male membership since its founding. And today, we have Sherlockians of all sexes who are participating in the organization, its name notwithstanding. And it will continue to be called the Sons of the Copper Beeches, even though it's the Sons and the Daughters of the Copper Beeches. But it's great to come to a meeting of the Copper Beeches where the room is full. There must have been at least 50 people there. There wasn't a spare chair. And you know, the quality of the discussion, the ability to be in a place like that and just meet so many of your friends all in one place. Hmm. And so many of the stalwarts of the Sherlockian world, people like Marina Stajic and Jen Eaker and Ashley Polasek. Oh, and Rebecca Romney was there. She'd come up from Washington and was going back to D.C.
Well, that's great.
And,
so talk a little bit about some of the traditions of the Copper Beeches and how those might be expressed today.
Well, the traditions, you know, are still maintained, and then it's generally the same menu, but that doesn't really matter. I mean, in my time in the Copper Beeches, it's been in three different locations. It's been in its current location at Philadelphia's Racquet Club. Oh, I think certainly for the last, probably longer than I think. It could be 10 years at this point.
I think that's about right, because I remember going, I don't remember if I came down from Boston or if I came out from Michigan one time, and it was at the Union League Club, if I recall. Does that ring a bell? Would it have been?
Well, I don't remember it ever being at the Union League.
Or maybe I stayed at the Union League Club. That may be. And Mycroft, what was the Saturday afternoon group that gathered? Mycroft's
League.
Mycroft's League, yeah.
Which Frank Ferry used to run. Yeah. Yeah, well, we used to stay at the – some of us would stay at the Union League, but the meetings were at the
Racket.
Orpheus Club, I think.
Oh, the Orpheus Club. First. Yeah, I don't think I was ever there.
Yeah, that was the first location that I was at. And then I think there was another – or maybe there was a location before that. I honestly don't remember.
It could have been. Well, that's neither here nor there, but it sounds like the same format, the same – you know, staid and traditional presentation still exists, although imbued with lively new blood.
Well, yeah, that's true. I mean, Michael Keane, the incoming Wiggins of the Baker Street Irregulars, was there. And the meeting, as you say, is happily imbued with new blood. Marcia Pollock, I remember, gave a great toast. Sue Dollinger was there. It was great to see Sue. And, you know, just so many of our friends. Ira Metetsky had come up from New York. Ross Davies had come up from Washington. John Besh and Evie Herzog.
Yeah.
Chris Zordan was busy taking pictures. Terry Hunt is usually there recording the minutes of the meeting, but I sat in for Terry because he was unable to be there for that meeting. Oh. In the meetings, Dan Andriacco was there. So many people had, you know, nice things to say about the podcast. And I had a lovely conversation with Charlie Blankstein. And I think Charlie did the program this year about Single Stick. You know, Charlie had listened to our Trifles. I think it was a Trifles episode on Single Stick. And he pointed out that he was the one at who did a Single Stick demonstration. And I think it was at the Sons of the Copper Beaches and not the Speckled Band, as I'd remembered. Or maybe not. But in any case, if we ever want to do more on Single Stick, Charlie Blankstein is the guy because he has among other things, collection of Single Sticks and deep knowledge of where that particular sport, the evolution of that sport and its purpose and its actions. Huh. And that's the great thing about this. You know, Greg Ruby, another enthusiast, but his specialty is numismatics. Mm-hmm. We've had him on the show, was there. That's the great thing about organizations like the Sons of the Copper Beaches. They bring together people with so many diverse interests.
Yeah.
And Bobcats is the master of ceremonies, the headmaster, who really moves the meeting along and does a great job.
Yeah.
Poor Bob doesn't get to eat very much because he's really running the program and making sure things happen.
Well,
and the rituals of the Copper Beaches include things like the recitation of the Musgrave Ritual, which is what you must do as part of a small group of new participants to advance to the exalted rank of Master Copper Beachsmith.
Hmm. Now, how does that work?
Oh, well, it usually works. Steve Chalet is the keeper of the ritual, and Steve convenes the group of apprentices who are now at their second meeting and have not yet given a paper for the most part. And they must, as a group, recite the Musgrave Ritual and
by memory.
To the acclamation of the assemblage, they are then promoted in their rank. And once you deliver a learned paper at the meeting, you can then become a master copper beachsmith.
Yeah.
And so Mike was busy.
That's wonderful.
Bob was busy also bestowing those honors on people.
Hmm. That's wonderful. Now, I want to circle back to some of the names that you had dropped there. For those who may be new to the podcast or new to the world of Sherlock Holmes, these names may not mean anything to you. And we mention lots of names throughout the shows. I think the ones that probably should be more familiar to you? Are those like Vincent Sterrett, Christopher Morley, Edgar Smith, William Baring Gould, Leslie Klinger? But I do want to point out that what's interesting about what you've kind of illustrated with the attendance at the Sons of the Copper Beaches is, yeah, certainly there are numbers of or members of the old guard who are there. And yet, you know, I think now more than ever, we are seeing an influx of younger blood. And there's a sense of continuity that I'm seeing from some of these old bastions, you know, these old societies that, you know, if they had remained single sex or single gender entities, probably would have gone the way of the dodo, as single sex organisms typically do. This was not only a nod to the present, but it was an acknowledgement toward the furthering of the pastime. Well, we need younger blood to hand things off to, and having those older members in attendance and participating in those traditions demonstrates and passes on those traditions to the next generation of Sherlockians. And I think that kind of continuity is so important as we're keeping green the memory of Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, very much agree. And that's one of the reasons why it's so exciting to be at the Copper Beaches. I mean, you know, when you get down to these kinds of groups, literary societies that just gather because they have gather occasionally, you know, and this Copper Beaches meets twice a year, once in April, once in October. The fuel for it, the exciting thing about it is seeing old friends and always having something interesting to talk about. And it's not, you know, always the minutia of Sherlock Holmes. It's what's going on in their lives.
That's right.
And I should mention, speaking about the Copper Beaches, Ray Betzner, who is a stalwart of the organization, and of course Steve Rothman, who is also editor of the Baker Street Journal, was there. Oh, and Nick Meyer. Nick,
he's been following you.
A surprise guest.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. He was on his way, I think, the next day to the Folger Library where he was giving a talk. Oh, and Nick did something really remarkable, which I really admired. Bob had introduced him. He was signing books. Nick was signing books. Mm-hmm. And Bob had introduced him, and I can't quite remember what the link was. I think Bob, in his introductions, made a Shakespearean reference. maybe it was to a particular holiday or a particular anniversary or a particular commemoration. Anyway, impromptu, Nick gave the speech from I can't remember which Henry it was. But, you know, the Band of Brothers speech, basically.
Henry V on Crispin's Day, right?
Yeah, the Crispin's Day speech. Verbatim and you know, pretty much dead spot on. Right off the top of his head to an appreciative audience.
That's amazing.
So there you are.
Well, we hope you are an appreciative audience, and in doing so, we will present you with this quick word from our sponsor.
The ancient Anglo-Saxon kingdom of Wessex is looking forward to the fall harvest, when our peasants work in our fields, cut timber, haul water, spin and weave, and we collect their tithes. Every tenth egg, sheaf of wheat, lamb, chicken, and all the other animals. The peasant's lot is hard, but you can relax with your copy of a curious collection of dates through the year with Sherlock Holmes, highlighting every day with significant events from the Sherlockian universe. Available right now from our WessexPress.com. No faint and hesitating trill, such tribute as to winter chill the lonely redbreast pays, clear, loud, and lively is the din from social warblers gathering in. But you can tune it all out when you reach for the pleasure only a volume from the Wessex Press provides. Choose yours today.
Always a delight to visit the distant shores of Wessex. Well, speaking of Wessex, they, of course, are an imprint of Gasogene Books, and in 1987, I believe it was, and then again in 1994, Wessex Press, Gasogene Books, issued, or published, I should say, Good Old Index, and then the new Good Old Index by Bill Goodrich. And it's funny because in this day and age of the internet, where we have everything at our fingertips, it seems odd that we would need a book to pull off of our shelves to reference, mustaches in the canon, or, what the names of certain dogs were. But doing a word search of a PDF online does not necessarily come up with the same kind of concentrated and specific results that one might get from a reference library. And there are a scant few books that every Sherlockian should have that help in this regard. One is the Encyclopedia Sherlockiana by Jack Tracy. Another, if you can get your hands on it, is the Canonical Compendium by Steve Clarkson. And kind of neck and neck with the compendium is Bill Goodrich's The New Good Old Index. And this, of course, goes without saying. You've already got a Baring Gould, and you've got the Sherlock Holmes Reference Library by Les Klinger. But in terms of a single-volume reference, you really couldn't do worse than the Good Old Index. And had word just over the weekend that Bill Goodrich passed away. He was about 83 years old, I think. He was a longtime executive at the First National Bank of Chicago and had been invested in the Baker Street Irregulars in 1977 as, oh, goodness gracious, what was his investiture? Alexander Holder. How about that? The banker from the Beryl Coronet. And, Bill's contribution to the Chicago area Sherlockian movement, as well as the larger Sherlockian movement with New Good Old Index, and, of course, the original Good Old Index, were absolutely legion. So we offer a bow of the head and a tip of the deerstalker to the memory of Bill Goodrich.
Well, that's very appropriate.
Well, this is the end of October, the beginning of November, and that means it is it's high season for the holidays as we get into Thanksgiving, Christmas, Hanukkah, the New Year, etc. And quickly thereafter, that means the BSI weekend is happening. You, of course, can get updates on that if you go to bakerstreetirregulars.com. You can sign up for email updates directly from the BSI. Of course, you can always check our old standby site, bsiweekend.com. I would expect that sometime between now and the next episode on November 15th, we will see an update to those sites with all the information you need to know about the BSI weekend in New York, which is happening, I believe, Martin Luther King Day weekend, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, it's the, it's right around the 17th of January this year.
Yeah, let me see, look at the calendar here. Technically, the weekend will informally, I should say, kick off on the 15th with an Ash Wednesday informal dinner. And then, of course, things happening on Thursday the 16th, including the BSI Distinguished Speaker Lecture, the William Gillette Luncheon on Friday the 17th, Friday evening, the 17th, would be the BSI dinner or the Gaslight Gala. And then Saturday, the 18th, is the vendors room and the BSI cocktail party. The only thing that is not open to the public is the BSI dinner, the rest of it, and you'll see them all listed on our sites, are open to the public. So if you happen to be able to get to New York between the 15th and the 19th of January, please join us all for the festivities at the BSI weekend. Bit of personal news, I don't want to spend too much time on personal news here, but with two teenage boys, who are involved in hockey, I should say, that means that our schedules are not our own in the Monty household from September through April, basically, particularly on weekends. And typically what happens is there is a tournament scheduled the weekend of Martin Luther King Day weekend. And with two boys, and typically they both have tournaments, that means that my wife and I each have to take one of them and split in whatever direction we're going. And the BSI weekend alternates with the Sherlock Holmes Society of London annual dinner. One of them happens first in January one year, and then they swap, and the other happens first in January. So every other year, the BSI weekend happens close to Martin Luther King Day. And that means every other year now, it seems like I'm going to have to miss the BSI weekend. Well, wonders never cease. One of our sons, his team, actually let us know that they would not be able to do a tournament in South Bend, Indiana, the weekend of Martin Luther King Day. So it looks like I'm coming to New York.
Oh, wonderful. I'll alert the media. Tell all the people at the bridges and tunnels to let you through.
I like that.
Yeah, that's great. You have a very good track record all these years. You know, you've only missed BSI dinner once or twice.
Once. Yeah, 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I was devastated to have to do it, but, you know, these are the things you do for your family.
That's right.
Yeah. Because you hope your family stays with you a lot longer than Sherlock Holmes. I don't know. there's some people who think the opposite way, too. You never know.
Yes.
You never know. Well, I did want to also alert our listeners, especially our longtime listeners, that we have a new feature coming up. Now, we are getting toward the end of 2019. And we have seen enough contributors support us on Patreon and PayPal to be able to afford the transcription services that allow us to create a transcript for every episode. And that is a wonderful thing. And we wanted to celebrate these people. So here's what we're doing. Not only will supporters get the gifts that are, or the thank you gifts that are promised to them at each level. And you can see those if you go to patreon.com/IHearOfSherlock. But we are also throwing in this bonus for our financial supporters only. And that means hopefully you're going through Patreon. It's a lot easier for us to manage things on Patreon. If you must do PayPal, we understand, but Patreon is our preferred support mechanism. For those supporters of the show, we will have a very special outtakes episode for you at the end of 2019. You know, the dulcet tones and the finely tuned conversation that you hear from Bert and I does not come by accident. Oh, no. It comes by specific and careful editing. And we don't have a team of editors. Lest you think this support is going to support our editing. Clearly, for those of you who have listened for a long time, we do not have paid editors. However, there are bits of conversations that we have before and after the show, or maybe certain things that we cut out from the middle of the show, that we thought it might be fun to bring you into. for you to understand what goes on behind the scenes here at I Hear of Sherlock Everywhere. If you are not yet a supporter, we encourage you to go to patreon.com/IHearOfSherlock or just hit that orange button right on the IHearOfSherlock.com homepage and or on the show notes. And that would allow you, before the end of the year, to get in on one of these very special, very exclusive outtakes episodes. And if it looks like it works well, then, well, maybe we'll consider it again going into 2020.
I can't wait to hear it.
Neither can I. You know, we need to screw up some more so we can create more outtakes.
Oh, yeah. That's going to be a real challenge.
No problem. No problem. Stand back. I'm getting ready over here. Oh. Well, I did want to go to one comment that we got from Eric Skase. Eric Skase commented on episode 173 with Rosemary Herbert. Remember, Rosemary told us that wonderful story about how she managed to sneak into a speckled band dinner in 1974 as a woman. Well, she still is a woman, was a woman then, but snuck in disguised as a man. And Eric actually had some of the backstory there, some of the momentum that triggered women joining the speckled band. You know, we talked earlier about women joining some of these previously single-gender organizations, and the band, it took them long enough, but Eric had some of the background on there. And he writes, "Hello, Scott and Bert. Recently, I've had the opportunity to listen to IHOs and Trifles episodes of the past that I didn't hear when they were first released. The delightful interview with Rosemary Herbert on episode 173 brought back many memories of dinners of the Speckled Band over the years since I first moved to Boston. There remains, however, one lingering mystery to complete the story. What was the triggering event that caused the Speckled Band to amend its requirements for attendance and membership, such that women could attend in 2018. The background behind Rosemary's adventure could be fully disclosed, and she and other women, including those yet unborn, could become members of the band. As it turned out, the event occurred just a few years prior. In 2016, in September, at the Chautauqua BSI conference, an officer of the band was quietly approached about the likelihood of admitting a woman as a member. The suggestion was made that an item of Sherlockian scholarship be submitted in order to bring the issue to the fore. In January 16th, specifically, of 2017, Richard Olkin received an email from J.M. Schilling, asking about the procedure to submit a paper for the presentation at a band meeting. On January 19th, 2017, Richard Olkin replied, asking if the author has attended a meeting as attendance at a meeting is required before a paper can be accepted. On February 21st, 2017, the aforesaid band officer receives via indirect channels the proposed paper of J.M. Schilling for evaluation of a suitability as an item of Sherlockian scholarship as an act de provocateur to bring forward the question of women as members. May 5th, 2017, at the annual meeting of the band, the leadership proposes and the members in attendance unanimously agree to permit women to become members under the same terms as men. May 4th, 2018, first meeting at which women were welcomed, including J.M. Schilling. And in May 2019, Rosemary, J.M. Schilling, and three other women were admitted as members, one of whom carried an unborn child. By unanimous consent, the fetus was declared to have attended its first meeting and may submit an item of original scholarship at some future date. An odd footnote, The paper submitted by J.M. Schilling as the instigating act de provocateur was not allowed as her qualifying submission of Sherlockian scholarship. Almost 2 years after that paper's initial submission to the band, the Baker Street Journal preempted consideration by publishing the paper in the August 2018 issue. That's volume 3 of 2018. Number 3 of 2018. The band requires a work of original and unpublished scholarship. Hence, J.M. Schilling had to write a second paper to gain entry to the Speckled Band, a paper which will also appear in an upcoming BSJ issue. And, writes Eric, now you know the rest of the story.
Well, that's worthy of Paul Harvey. I really like that. The rest of the story. I had no idea all that was going on.
Yeah. Yeah, people are busy behind the scenes. This is marvelous.
Yeah.
So there you have it. Well, now we, of course, have, as you guessed from that fine music, the time when we bring you the canonical couplet. That's right. It's the Sherlockian quiz show that everyone knows and loves, where we give you two lines of poetry, and you need to identify the Sherlock Holmes story based on that entry. The last time around, here's what we gave you. When a man of questionable ethics lays his past bare, only photographic proof can spoil the affair. Bert, do you know which Sherlock Holmes story we're referring to?
Yes, of course. That is the Darlington substitution daguerreotype.
I like that. Swapping one photo for the other.
Yeah.
That's great. But no, it's not it.
No.
The answer we were looking for is, of course, the illustrious client. The illustrious client. Of course, Baron Gruner had questionable ethics, and he made it clear with his intended, Violet de Merville, what his past was like. And it was only by showing photographs from his little journal that she could be made to break her engagement with him. Well, we had a number of entries here, but you know what? A number of the entries pointed in a different direction. Most people guessed A Scandal in Bohemia. That's interesting. And I would imagine that's because the photograph, of course, Irene Adler's photograph with the King of Bohemia, would naturally presuppose itself. But I don't know that, well, the King kind of did lay his past bare to Sherlock Holmes, did he not?
Yeah, that's true. Well, I can understand why people would think it was a scandal, yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's throw all the names into the barrel here and give it a spin. And we're going to give away two prizes, one to someone who said A Scandal in Bohemia and one to a person who said The Illustrious Client. How does that sound?
Good. Well, I think that's very democratic.
Okay. Well, all right. Get your hands on the barrel here with me, Bert, up way up high there. Okay. And we're ready. And we're going to give it a big spin. Okay. There we go. There we go. It's going around and around. And it looks like it's landing on number 22. That's a good number. Number 22. And that leads to, well, it looks like Olivia Kirkendall. And it also looks like Stacy Kim. Well, congratulations, ladies. We will be getting in touch with both of you and showing you the way to get your prize from the IHO's vaults. Thanks for participating. And now, it's time for the very next canonical couplet. Are you ready, Bert?
Oh, yes, yes.
Here we go. Of a great evil, Holmes unearthed the root. The game was undeniably afoot. If you think you know the answer to this canonical couplet, send it in an email to comment@iHearOfSherlock.com with canonical couplet in the subject line. If you are among the correct answers and we select you, you might win a prize. Good luck.
Ah, what a puzzle.
You know, you have to be attentive on that one because I didn't say root. I said root. Mm. It's foot. Root and foot. Or root and foot, I guess. Ah. Well, this was fun. Something a little different for a change, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know if we completely bored people out of their skulls or if they enjoyed this. You know, this is a perfect opportunity, everyone, to send in a comment and let us know what you thought of this show, of this format. You know, I suppose in one way or another, it can be perceived as an extra length trifles or kind of a return to what we used to do on I Hear of Sherlock Everywhere before we had guests on every single episode.
Well, you know, there's so much going on in the Sherlockian world. It's a good thing every once in a while, you know, just to pause and get caught up. And if you think about pretty much everything we talked about happened, you know, within the course of 5 days.
Yeah, that's true.
It's
that's impressive.
You know, it's absolutely amazing what's going on.
Well,
it's a great time to be a Sherlockian, friends.
Well, isn't it always, though? And it's funny because we had seen this burst of activity beginning around 2009, 2010. The Robert Downey Jr. films, of which there were two, and there's a third one coming next Christmas. We saw the rise of BBC Sherlock. We saw Elementary go through seven or eight seasons. We saw great interest online on Twitter and Tumblr. And of new events popping up, places like 221 Beacon. Oh, you know, Left Coast Sherlock just happened out in Portland. You know, there is no lack of interest or dedication to Sherlock Holmes right now. And it's absolutely a gratifying time for us to be chronicling this and bringing it to you. In the episodes moving ahead, we are going to be addressing things related to music, maybe an old Baker Street irregular, some books of folks dedicated to the visual arts, and much, much more. If you like what you hear here, then please head over to patreon.com/IHearOfSherlock, and that'll actually give you that bonus of getting into our outtakes distribution. So check it out. Have we done enough damage?
I think so. I think that's it.
All right. Well, then I will be the damaging Scott Monty.
And I'm the Teflon-coated Bert Wolder.
Well done. You're so slippery. And together we say,
the game's afoot.
the game's afoot.
You know, I'm afraid that in the pleasure of this conversation, I'm neglecting business of importance, which awaits me elsewhere.
Thank you for listening. Please be sure to join us again for the next episode of I Hear of Sherlock Everywhere, the first podcast dedicated to Sherlock Holmes.
Goodbye, and good luck, and believe me to be, my dear fellow, very sincerely yours, Sherlock Holmes.